Hi, Year 11s. We haven't done one of these for a while, so we thought we would just do a podcast, basically with you overhearing our conversation as an English team. So myself, Miss Meeks, and Mr. Neil and Miss Ross are going to be reading through a source and discussing how we would answer the questions 1 to 4 for language paper 1. So it's the type of thing that you'll be doing tomorrow. It's not exactly the same, so by all means don't memorise what we're saying, but engage with the material. I'm going to put up the source later tonight so that it's available for you guys as well. Okay, so have you read it, Miss Ross?
I have skimmed through only the first paragraph.
Okay, so we kind of agree, don't we, that the way that you would start this paper is by looking at the questions.
Yeah, definitely, because that saves you reading the questions and then rereading it.
Yeah, okay. So if we're looking at the first one then, the four things that you learn about this character whose name I can't pronounce. So you want to be looking in lines 1 to 7. How then would you go about that? Would you read all the questions first or do one and then...
I would look at the actual source and put a box or circle around lines 1 to 7 and just do that before reading the whole source because I don't want to accidentally remember things from other bits and include them.
Because I actually had that.
And the way the questions are structured is that it builds up to a full text reveal. Okay. So it should work you through step by step. So it lends to that approach quite well.
Okay. So say with question 1, we do our box and we answer it, or we do our box and we leave it and look at question 2? What do you think?
I think
I'd answer it.
I'd box
it. Because then once you've done the whole thing, you can then go back and double check and see if there's anything you want to edit. But yeah, I think that helps you keep a more effective view on time. Yeah, and more
focused. Yeah, okay. So we'd find our area. So in the case of the source that we're using, which is the diving bell and the butterfly, we're just going to be looking at lines 1 to 7. And we need to find four things about this person. Okay, so shall I just read through it and then you guys highlight the bits that you think are relevant?
Sure.
So, through the frayed curtain at my window, a warm glow announces the break of day. My heels hurt, my head weighs a ton, and something like a giant invisible cocoon holds my whole body prisoner. My room emerges slowly from the gloom. I linger over every item, photos of loved ones, my children's drawings, posters, the little tin cyclist sent to me by a friend the day before the Paris-Roubaix bike race, and the IV pole hanging over the bed where I've been confined these past 6 months, like a hermit crab dug into his rock. Excuse the cold, by the way. So four things then about the person. What do we think?
Quite difficult. I definitely think at the beginning when they're talking about, you know, the window and the room, you're almost searching for something, but there's nothing.
Yeah, that's... And one of my students made a point about he lives in poor conditions because of the frayed curtain. And I think...
That's too much of an inference.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I think you can overthink this question far too much when there are much more obvious alternatives.
Well,
that's
because I had some people saying, you know, that she's been in an accident, and you can't get that from those seven lines.
I agree.
So I would start with the ones that I came up with when I was doing it was just straight away, her heels hurt.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I circled that.
Her head weighs a ton. Mm-hmm. Did you have that or not?
Yeah, but then the issue there is that that's a metaphor, isn't it?
Yeah,
so
okay.
It would be something along the lines of her head was damaged or she'd suffered an injury to her head. But there needs to be an element of inference there, I think.
Yeah.
You can't just put head weighs a ton.
Okay.
But yeah.
And then she has children.
Yep.
Was that what you guys got?
Yeah,
and I put that she was, or he, was sentimental.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because again, kind of going through each of these things...
Yeah, it's the lingering over them. It's the lingering over the pictures, or lingering over every item that makes them seem sentimental.
Yeah, I like that. So I like the sentimental. Anything else?
Been there for 6 months.
Yep, that was one I got as well.
Yeah, thank you. Long-term stay in, you know, a hospital or whatever it was, if they're hooked up to an IV. But again, you don't know that it's a hospital.
Yeah, no. You don't know, but you've got clues there, haven't you? Mm-hmm. So wherever she's been there for 6 months. So we kind of agreed if we have a solid 4 being that her heels hurt, she's got children, she's sentimental, and she's been there 6 months.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So, question two. How does the writer use language here to show the feelings of the character? Now, what I've been saying to mine is that they need to really circle or highlight what it is they're looking for.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
So, for, in this case, it's feelings.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then we've got the generic, you can include the writer's choice of words and phrases, obviously. Imagery and language techniques. Sentence structure and length. That one, I don't...
Well, that's the one that we've been advised to just ignore. Stay away from because it complicates things, doesn't it?
Yeah, what I've told my students is if you're going to comment on sentence structure and length, it is only if you were talking about a word or phrase that happens to be in a short sentence.
Yeah, okay.
And you can say the short sentence draws attention to these words, but it's still a language focus.
Yeah, if
and
you
even,
get bogged
even
down...
Even then, I think it moves too far into question three as a structural feature.
It's not necessary.
It's a bit stupid as a bullet point.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, you just want to be focusing on the writer's methods, essentially, as the assessment objective.
Yeah.
How have they put across this feeling? So... The bit that we're using is actually the bit that we've already read.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you do then? So would you then start looking at this section and answering question two?
Yeah, I would.
Okay. So shall we look at this section and try and come up with...
Sounds good.
Yeah, okay. I'll read through it and then we can maybe decide on the feelings and then decide on the quotes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds good.
So I'm just going to read through it again. Actually, I've got a really snotty, horrible voice. Does someone else want to take over?
Yep, I'm happy to.
Go on, listener.
So it's that same extract again, isn't it?
Yeah.
Through the frayed curtain at my window, a warm glow announces the break of day. My heels hurt, my head weighs a ton, and something like a giant invisible cocoon holds my whole body prisoner. My room emerges slowly from the gloom. I linger over every item, photos of loved ones, my children's drawings, posters, the little tin cyclist sent by a friend the day before the Paris-Roubaix bike race, and the IV pole hanging over the bed where I've been confined these past 6 months, like a hermit crab dug into his rock.
Well read. I've just realised I think I referred to as your first name. Oops. Okay, so with this idea of feelings, are you going with one, two?
I think two.
I was going for multiple, yeah. I would say, actually, if you're going to be doing 2 to 3 paragraphs using multiple quotes to kind of support, then each paragraph would have a different feeling.
Yeah,
okay.
I'd agree with that.
Okay, so you would... what are some of the feelings that you're thinking, then?
I said at the beginning, maybe feeling a bit appreciative of any kind of chance at like that warm glow.
I didn't get that at all.
And that sort of thing.
That's really interesting. Okay.
So I think if you're trapped in kind of a hospital room or, you know, your house...
Yeah. Well, that's the next point that I got, was more obvious, trapped or isolated.
Yeah, I was going to say, I went with quite obvious ones. I think the feeling of being trapped is quite easy. I don't know why I put trapped. trapped, isolated. Now, obviously, with these feelings things, I've kind of been saying to my class that if you're struggling, you know that it's going to be positive or negative. Mm-hmm. So if you can't... pinpoint a particular thing, start with, well, first of all, is it a positive feeling? Is that going to be happiness, excitement, love? Those are the ones that are positive. If it's negative, it might be, you know, it might be this idea of loneliness, it might be sadness, it might be fear. These are things that would branch under. So try and at first figure out if it's good or bad. So we've got trapped, we've got appreciative. What else?
Well, again, you have with the sentimental being kind of broody, being kind of wishing that they were somewhere else. But I think that would link in with the trapped in isolation anyways.
They're the only two that I can really...
So see...
What about the pain and the suffering?
Yeah, okay. That's sort of like a physical feeling.
Mm.
Yeah, okay.
Because it doesn't say it's just emotion.
No, that's true.
See, how I've been doing this, and now you guys have said about your three separate paragraphs, I worry that I've just screwed my classes over... I've been saying to have one overall thing and then this almost the different strands. So if you've got the isolation, you could have trapped, you could have loneliness, and you could have the physical pain which has caused this.
I think that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, okay. So you could, so that's not necessarily wrong, so don't fear my class.
But I also think we have to bear in mind that under previous specifications, it's been expected that you write a lot about language. This is only an 8-mark question. It's only 10 minutes. Two paragraphs,
that's why I'm
three
thinking...
at the maximum. If you're doing any more than that, they're wasting time.
That's why I've had them almost do one main thing and have the others all feeding to support that one, mm-hmm. so that you don't need to think that you need to write a page and a half for an 8-mark question and then...
And then run out of time on question 5.
So if you can get some of these general ideas and you can build them all together...
I think linking them is going to get you a stronger analysis anyway.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
And I think also, like I was telling my class, like don't ever just have one quote in a paragraph.
No.
Like you should always be linking your ideas, showing
two,
how...
I think we're saying three, quotes, don't we?
Yeah, like, I said 2 to 3.
And just key words, one or two keywords, because to get into that band 4 or level 4, it has to be judicious selection of evidence, doesn't it?
Okay, so then the words and phrases that we would use for our answer here, the obvious ones that spring to mind if we were doing the trapped in isolation, we've got the idea of a prisoner.
Yep.
That's one word that you can pick out.
Yep.
Invisible cocoon.
Yep.
Also supporting that.
Confined.
So we've got three there. That's just for that one, one idea. If we were to pick a different one, then if we were to talk about the physical feeling,
you have the hyperbole with the head.
Head weighs
a ton.
Yeah. Could you say that was one of mine said it was a metaphor today? I guess it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it can be both. You can have personification that is also a metaphor.
Yeah.
So the two are exclusive.
And then we've got the list,
yeah.
And I also thought this is actually more moving into the question 3, because we've got the really nice juxtaposition between in that list the photos of the loved ones, etc., and then the IV pole hanging over the bed.
Love that.
That sort of really jarring back to reality. But I think that's more question 3.
Yeah, I would say
more question 3. But for my class today, who were like, oh, I don't know about juxtaposition, I think that's a really good example, my class, of juxtaposition.
Yeah.
So well spotted, Miss Meeks.
Thank you. Obviously, we've got some obvious, like, if you're not confident with language techniques, it's not the end of the world. But if you can identify it as a method, they've used this simile, like a hermit crab. Obviously, we've got animalistic imagery with both that and the cocoon.
Mm.
So I thought that you could, if you were looking for those higher marks, you could talk. I know some of my class now today talked about her loss of humanity being reflected in this animalistic imagery.
Yeah.
Love that.
I mean, they are amazing.
I think the biggest thing is you can't just say they've used a simile like a giant invisible cocoon and not say the effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you need to consider why would they use a cocoon or why would they use a hermit, that particular simile.
Exactly.
And I think that's where people are losing marks because they're just saying, and this shows that they feel like they're alone, but they haven't actually said
what the effect is of that word, what the writer's intention was in choosing that word.
Yeah. The whole point of this really is understanding the writer's choice. Okay, cool. Question 3.
All right,
let's do it.
For this we need to read the whole text.
Shall I just carry on from where we left off?
Carry on from where we left off. So we finished with what, like a hermit crab dug into his rock.
No need to wonder very long where I am, or to recall that the life I once knew was snuffed out Friday, the 8th of December last year. Up until then, I'd never even heard of the brainstem. I've since learned that it's an essential component of our internal computer, the inseparable link between the brain and the spinal cord. That day, I was brutally introduced to this vital piece of anatomy where a cerebrovascular accident took my brainstem out of action. In the past, it was known as a massive stroke, and you simply died. But improved resuscitation techniques have now prolonged and refined the agony. You survive, but you survive with what is so aptly known as locked-in syndrome, paralysed from head to toe. The patient, his mind intact, is imprisoned inside his own body, unable to speak or move. In my case, blinking my left eyelid is my only means of communication. Of course, the party chiefly concerned is the last to hear the good news. I myself had 20 days of deep coma and several weeks of grogginess and solemnness before I truly appreciated the extent of the damage. I did not fully awake until the end of January. When I finally surfaced, I was in room 119 of the Naval Hospital at Berck-sur-Mer on the French Channel coast, the same room 119 infused now with the first light of day from which I write. An ordinary day. At 7, the chapel bells begin again to punctuate the passage of time, quarter hour by quarter hour. After their night's respite, my congested bronchial tubes once more begin their noisy rattle. My hands, lying curled on the yellow sheets, are hurting, although I can't tell if they're burning hot or ice cold. Sorry, I can't tell if they're burning hot or ice cold. To fight off the stiffness, I instinctively stretch my arms and legs, moving only a fraction of an inch. It is often enough to bring relief to a painful limb.
Well read.
Ooh.
Okay. I like this sourceness.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I've not read this book, though, so I don't have a clue what happens. But I think that's obviously quite important, because when chances are you're not going to know. So if we think about the structure then, what I've said, and this is not by any means something that everyone needs to do, but I've just made mine right, almost like a mini box, where I just put beginning, middle, end, literally beg, mid, end, narrative, jux, for. So narrative, juxtaposition, foreshadowing, those are the things that I've been saying to look for. And then obviously you want to think about the paragraphs and sentences, and that's kind of told, you're told about that through. But
yeah,
I think...
I would say that paragraphs and sentences, that if you're clutching at straws and you've got nothing else to write about, that's when you write about
paragraphs. I was
going to
say, because I don't find paragraphs and sentences particularly interesting.
And it's too difficult, I think, to come up with something that is genuinely interesting and intelligent that's going to get you up that mark scheme.
Yeah.
Just writing, he uses short sentences to make time go quickly. That's not going to it's not going to make the examiner sort of sit up and go, oh, this is very impressive.
Yeah. So but I think in every extract you can almost sort of fake foreshadowing, because everything, you know, no well-accomplished writer is not going to be giving hints and clues. Mm. Even if you haven't read what happens next. If you can make... it's the same as predictions, basically.
Mm. Yeah.
So you as a reader responding by coming up with predictions, they've come from foreshadowing. So if you can... I had one of my year 11s actually say that maybe this cocoon, this idea of a cocoon and from that a butterfly, shows that foreshadows perhaps hope for her recovery. So anything like that that you can... say, it's insightful, and if it's a structural comment, you know, it's gonna, you know, it's more likely to get you a mark than saying they used a complex sentence.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think one of the other easy things to see is like reoccurring imagery or reoccurring words.
Yeah.
So like at the beginning of this, we obviously had the prison imagery, and then as soon as Mr. Neil was reading and I saw the word imprisoned, I was like, oh, there's the prison imagery again.
Yeah.
So you're starting to recognize when they're actually repeating imagery, or if we talk about a recurring motif.
Yes.
That idea of those themes or ideas that are reoccurring throughout the text. And that immediately jumped out at me as something I circled and wrote, repetition, prison imagery.
Yeah.
That's so easy to spot. Repetition is so easy.
Yeah.
And as long as you can say why.
And it doesn't have to be a word. This is the thing. They could say the repetition of my, actually that might be a relevant one, but nonetheless, it doesn't have to be a word. It can be an idea, and that can almost be more effective. If also you think about how the paragraphs are broken down, it is structured rather interestingly, where we've got the present, and then we move back, and we've got that shift in time, that sort of non-linear narrative. That third paragraph, I can't understand a word of it, but I feel like that's on purpose.
Like all that technical vocabulary.
It's so medical. It's almost it's confusing for the reader. Probably equally was confusing for her.
Yep.
Mm.
I think one thing that I'm noted was the very specific references to time. So 22 days like this and one week
like
this. And I think because for her, like, that is all she's focusing on is how long she's been stuck here. There's so many specific references to time.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, obviously when you're trapped with nothing to do, bored out of your mind.
Yeah.
That is, you're just counting down the days.
That's such a good idea. I didn't notice that. Well done.
Thanks.
So what would we talk about then? If we're talking about the structure, we're going to talk about,
again, you're only doing 2 to 3 paragraphs.
Yeah, should we go through your checklist of things that you would say
so,
and talk about each one?
Beginning, middle, and end then. So, you know, you could say this prison imagery is something that happens at the start. In the middle, we've got this technical sort of medical jargon that no one really understands. It might be an intentional paragraph there to confuse the reader about what's going on. I know lots of my students read this and then thought she'd been in a car accident because it says the word accident.
So they've missed the stroke bit.
Yeah. I think that's not necessarily that you've got it wrong, but I think it is meant to be confusing.
Yep. Yeah.
I think that's just, you know, reading through it again before you're doing it to make sure, because those students who did catch that it wasn't a car accident are probably going to have a different sort of analysis.
Yeah.
When you talked about beginning, middle, end, I was thinking about that kind of focus on her body, because at the beginning it's my head hurt, my head weighs a ton. Then you get to the middle where it's talking about the specific things that went wrong in her body. Then at the end it's my hands and my feet. So she's focusing on like the different aspects of her body and how they're being impacted.
And different aspects of her illness. Yeah. Okay, the narrative, well, we've said it's kind of like a non-linear, the time isn't...
Particularly at the end of paragraph 4, where it says...
I love that bit. Coast,
the same room 119, sort of bringing us back to that introductory paragraph that's explaining this idea of being locked in and sort of reminding us as the reader.
I think that cycle as well reflects her never-ending cycle.
That sort of repetition, just always going back, waking up, back in the same room.
Yeah. No, I really liked that at end of paragraph 4. And as you go through, like, there's nothing wrong with sort of scribbling all over your sheet. If you want to label, I've just put down the side of mine, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So you can say, you don't need to be writing out huge long quotes, but you can say the last line of paragraph 4 where she refers to room 119 again. And you've got yourself your reference to the text without spending hours writing out long quotes. So narrative we've covered. Juxtaposition we mentioned earlier in the list. Any other juxtaposition?
There's quite a few, actually. I was looking at the opening to the paragraphs seem to contradict the rest of the content. So through the frayed curtain at my window, a warm glow. So there's that positivity contrasted with the negativity of being a prisoner. And then in the third one, up until then, I'd never even heard of the brainstem, and then goes into the negativity.
I like that.
Of course, the party chiefly concerned is the last to hear the good news on paragraph 4, so that sort of optimism contrasted again to the rest of the paragraph. Mm. And then paragraph 5, an ordinary day at 7 the Chapel Bell, again.
Nice.
And that's almost the issue, is that it is becoming too much of an ordinary day for her. So I think the opening of each paragraph contrasts the rest of that paragraph.
Yeah.
And there's almost an element of an optimism.
And then it's
back
taken away.
To remind us that suffering from locked-in syndrome.
Yeah, there's definitely that... The structure definitely builds in with this idea of basically a recurring nightmare.
Yeah. Actually, that would be a good structure to say that the writer is trying to...
Create
the idea of a recurring nightmare through... And that through structure, I think that would be looking at sort of level 4... criteria.
I think the thing to remember is it is only 8 marks.
Yeah.
So, like, don't worry if, you know...
You don't need to be writing pages and pages. Well, that's the thing where people are really shooting themselves in the foot, is you can go through and we're marking and they're getting 4 and 7, 7 out of 8. Great.
But then
they're getting 2 out of 20
because
they've not had time, or they've not had time to do the section B.
And even if you don't think you've had a good crack at question 3... Don't keep on plugging away, trying to make it up.
I think
because you then
you
just,
get
you're
it
just
or
sabotaging
you don't.
Yourself,
yeah.
aren't you?
Yep. Yeah.
I'd far rather a student threw away 4 marks on question 3 than 10 marks on question 4.
Mm. Yeah. And with regards to section Bs, what are you saying about... Because I've said to some of my students, if you're not confident with time, to start with section B. Now, I know you don't really agree with that, do you?
No. The problem with that is, I think, because the idea of the analysis and looking at this piece of text, what you then have to write about is going to be something on the same
level,
on the same vein, on the same level. So the idea is that you're exposed to these ideas, and you might think, oh, I like the idea of contrasting a beautiful day with being a prisoner. I'm going to try that in my writing. Whereas if you start
that'd
with...
That'd be great if they do that.
Wouldn't it? Whereas if you start with question 5, you don't give yourself that opportunity. And, I mean, I see the validity in the argument of starting with question 5, because that is ultimately, it's a quarter of your GCSE, and if you think that a quarter of your GCSE at half a page of writing is going to suffice for a decent mark...
Yeah, you're wrong.
Yeah, you've got another thing coming.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, like, the last real paper 1 experience that they had, a lot of mine did... you know, really didn't do themselves justice. And they were writing in a way that was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a few that I even showed to you. And I was like, this is, you know, really high quality stuff. But you're writing half a page,
yeah,
and you wrote three quarters of a page for your 8-mark question. Mm. Yeah. Doesn't make sense.
No.
I think that's, they have to know their strength as well. Like, some people who are doing question five are such strong writers that they wouldn't need to read the reading section, and they'd be able to write brilliantly.
Yeah, I know my 10A1s.
You know, and some of them don't want to be kind of stealing ideas from what they've read. They want to be completely original, and they want to look at it with a fresh perspective to get something different.
Yeah.
But you could say the vast majority will benefit from doing the reading section first, because they'll suddenly, oh yeah, that's how you use a strong metaphor.
And also, I get the nobility in wanting to produce this piece of Shakespearean quality, but at the end of the day, the examiner's not going to recommend this for publication.
Yeah.
They're just looking to see, has it done everything it needs to on the marking criteria? Yeah. Yes, there's a number that I think is worked.
And they get a separate question anyway, so they're not going to...
No.
You know, whoever gets your question five, isn't going to see anything that you've done earlier.
No, exactly.
And actually, some of my really good, the really good ones that I was marking, I remember seeing ideas and they'd actually taken them from the poems. Sorry, pause for 1 second. Da, 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 da.
You can't edit that, can you?
No.
Oh, well.
Never mind. So, yeah, it's not, there's not a rule. There's not a one-size-fits-all. It's kind of down to really how much self-control you have.
Mm.
If you think that you don't have any self-control, and I know those people that don't. You need...
That, the
she's
advice,
pointing at the iPad right now.
The advice that the lady from Hertfordshire local authority gave us was that if you're going to start with... You might... start with question five or do question three, then one, then four, and changing the order around. And I think then it just gets far too complicated.
Yeah.
I think it's either you're confident in your writing ability, so start with question five.
Yeah. Oh, definitely don't start. Don't change the order from one to four.
Or start with question one, but be really strict on the timings.
Yeah.
And students that turn up to an exam without a watch, I will kill. Because you need it. It's fine to say there's a clock in the hall, but what if that stops working? What if you can't see it? What if you're sat behind somebody really tall? Take ownership for your own timekeeping and buy a cheap watch for the exams, please.
I would just use a stopwatch, because then you can actually see how long you're spending, not like an actual watch,
like
but put on the timer.
Digital watch.
Digital watch, put it on and be like, okay, I will look at 8 minutes and then give myself two minutes to wrap it up for those 8 marks questions.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, you don't want to be spending, what is it, 5 minutes for question one?
Most,
yeah. And then no more than 8 to 10 for 2 and 3.
Exactly.
So if you've been in the exam for half an hour, 1, 2, and 3 should be wrapped up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah.
And if not, stop writing. Just stop your question three. It's not worth that much.
Yeah.
Okay, so question four then. This is the one that...
This is the trickier one. It's more like a literature question, isn't it?
Well, yeah. It's tricky. And it's tricky to teach, I think, as well. So question four then. For this part of your answer... No, focus this part of your answer on paragraphs 3 and 4. This is worth 20 marks. So it's the same as 1, 2, and 3 all put together. The idea is that you can use the stuff you've used, that you've learned in 1, 2, and 3. So by the time you get to question four, the lady said, really, you should be able to answer question four and be confident in question four from what you've learned from 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And remember that when you're having your papers marked, they get sent off by questions,
that's
don't
right,
they?
Yeah.
So someone will get all the question ones, someone will get all the question twos. So if you've had an ingenious idea...
about the cocoon being a butterfly.
If you've had something that you're really proud of, by all means, use it again.
Now, what I would say, be very, very careful, because question two rarely uses the same extract as question four. So if you think, oh, I had that brilliant idea, I'm going to use it, but actually it's not from paragraphs 3 and 4, you've just shot yourself in the foot.
Yeah.
Now, if it's saying focus it, though, I've obviously highlighted 3 and 4.
Yeah.
You can still draw from the rest of the text.
I would say no. Because it's directing you towards paragraphs 3 and 4, if you're being directed towards any explicitly, or if you're explicitly being directed towards a piece of text, only talk about that piece of text.
Not, because you couldn't say how, you know, as with so and so.
I think you could, provided there's evidence that you're drawing from
three and four. So, and then you're linking it back to a different part of the answer. Okay.
I just, it gets so risky because if you start talking too much about that link you've made.
Well, also you don't, basically you don't want any of your evidence to come from anywhere other than three and four.
No.
So if you're making general comments.
Yeah.
Great. So the idea of being, and an evaluation. The idea of every paragraph opens positively, but contrasts that with the rest, as seen in paragraph three where.
La la la.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's fine, but don't start talking about 1, 2, or 5 in any detail because you won't be getting credited the marks for it.
Okay, so you see where you need to focus. Again, draw some sort of box around this, label it question 4. And we've got a student, having read this section of the text, said, "The writer creates a highly emotional journey for the reader. This section is both heartbreaking and good-humoured. To what extent do you agree?" In your response, you could write about your own impressions of the character. Evaluate how the writer has created these impressions. Support your opinions with references to the text. So here, the kind of things I'm highlighting would be emotional journey, heartbreaking, good humoured.
Yep.
That's what you're looking for in those paragraphs. And then you want to talk about your own impressions and ideas. That's a huge part of evaluation. How they've done it.
Yep.
With what success, and you want to have quotes.
Always quotes.
Always quotes.
So, 3 and 4 then. 3 is that really, really long one.
Mm.
Are we going to read that again?
No, I don't think, but I think, you know, if you're talking about it being, you know, heartbreaking, remember this question, when it's talking about how, you can be talking about some of the structural features. I think, you know, that idea that there's hope that's been destroyed and that sort of thing does occur, you know, in those paragraphs, most likely, if we'd said it was a structural thing in every, you know, 20 days of a coma and the grogginess and then surfaced and then that idea that you're in the same room.
Mm.
Like, I think that's quite heartbreaking, that idea that you just can't.
Yeah.
I think the, so what do we think about the character then? This
I quite like the, and it links to the idea of them being good humoured, the sort of the use of sarcasm and sort of irony to an extent. Things like the party chiefly concerned is the last to hear the good news.
Yeah.
So the sarcastic use of the phrase good news.
Yeah.
And also the party chiefly concerned. So they're almost talking about themselves in the third person.
Yeah.
Maybe trying to distance themselves from the situation. Prolonged in paragraph 3, prolonged and refined the agony, which is kind of an ironic expression.
It definitely you is. Think Because you wouldn't be refined, trying no, to make exactly. it... Refining something is making it better.
Absolutely,
so refining something like agony is the opposite of what you would expect.
Precisely.
Also, we've got, I guess, on that same note, where was... I saw another thing. Appreciating the extent of the damage. Mm. Normally, appreciation is something that's considered positive. But again, we've got that... referring to something that's negative.
I think if you're going for, you know, the emotional journey, then you'd be looking for all those kind of emotive words.
Mm.
So, you know, the idea that it was a massive stroke rather than just a stroke, or, you know, those sort of adjectives that they're using throughout. I'm trying to see if I can find another example quickly, but just the idea that actually you're seeing the extent.
Well, paralyzed head to toe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And actually then it's listed. We've got, there's a few use of lists actually here where it's almost, I think lists can be quite detached as well. Like, almost like, you know, you think of them as like your shopping list, things you've got to check off and to do.
Yeah.
And this is talking about her condition. I don't even know if it's her. It may well be a man. I think it might
be. Well, and in that instance, I think you either pick a gender and stick with it.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing to say whether you're right or wrong, or just refer to them as they or the writer, which is obviously gender neutral. But you're not going, what I would say is make sure you're consistent. So if you say he, stick with he all the way through, or she, stick with she all the way through.
Yeah. We've got again, when I finally surface. So I guess that surfaced could be, you know.
That made me think of a submarine, which also then links to the fact they're in a naval hospital.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, this idea of coming out from under this depth of depression.
Yeah, it's a deep coma.
Yeah, so there's a lot of sort of aquatic imagery.
Ooh, like it.
And I like it, something Miss Neal just did, by the way, is, you know, instead of just saying imagery, if you can be as specific as possible,
yeah,
you know, that will always kind of boost your
If you don't
bit.
Want to say aquatic, you could say sea life imagery, which is what I was thinking. There's the caliber there. And then obviously that thing we talked about with the shift in the focus, the structural thing where at the end of paragraph 4, where she's describing the room 119 and then brings it back to the same room 119, that structural comment can still be very relevant in your question 4 because it's in that right paragraph.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think the thing to watch for these questions is they tend to be 2 or 3-parters. Like in this case, it's why is it heartbreaking and good-humoured and an emotional journey. And I think if you were to just focus on one and talk about...
limit yourself.
You definitely limit yourself. So you can agree with part of it and then...
Would you say that it's worth each of those three picking and say, oh, I'll do a paragraph on that. Why it's heartbreaking, why it's humorous...
Why it's been a journey.
Yeah,
I think that's a good idea.
Especially because you can agree with parts of it and disagree with others, and that really helps you say, like, although I agree with this, I disagree with this bit.
Yeah. Okay, so how long do you think they should be spending on that half an hour?
I'd say, for this question, 20 marks, about 20 minutes.
Okay.
Because if you add up, you know, the 10, the 10, the 5, that would be about 45 minutes for this section and 15 minutes reading time.
Yeah. Okay. So... if we're reading then as we go, you could kind of incorporate that into your answers.
Yeah.
But I'd say, no more, you don't want to be spending any longer than half an hour on this question.
No, I'd say 20 to 25.
Okay.
Yeah.
20 to 25 minutes, talking about your ideas, but really focus on what they've asked you. So that student, even though we know that students don't say this sort of stuff, you've just got to kind of go with it. Figure out, highlight straight away what you're looking for and where you're looking.
Yes.
And then
the method. Please do the method, because so many times they're talking about, I disagree because of this, but they didn't actually say because they've used this listing or because they've used this imagery.
Yeah.
And it is a method question. It's worth 20 marks. You can't just ignore that.
Yeah. I think if you don't talk about the method, you're shooting yourself in the foot. What I don't really care about in this answer is for you to basically summarise what happens in paragraph 3 and 4. It's not relevant.
No.
It's not what the marks are for. It's about you evaluating 3 and 4. Mm. You telling me, have they been successful when they used this skill? And, you know, normally you want to say that they have been successful because...
It's easier.
It is much easier.
Yeah, if you're spoiling for a fight, the examiner's not going to think you're more intelligent just because you've challenged the system and argued with the statement.
Yeah.
You're not going to get more marks for that.
If anything, it's going to annoy them.
And it's going to make your life more difficult. If anything, just, okay, yes, I agree. Even if you think it's the most boring piece of text ever. Equally, don't sing it. You're not reviewing it. Don't say, this is a wonderful piece of writing.
Yeah, I've read a few of those.
The writer has done
brilliant
really
job.
Well.
And they just keep telling me how great it is.
I really enjoyed this piece of text.
No,
doesn't
you
matter.
Didn't.
That's not what they're asking you for. Don't become a reviewer. Do you agree with that statement? And where's your evidence for it?
Okay, so that would be your section A. That would hopefully be your 40 out of 40 for section A. And then your section B is your writing to describe... And I'm going to do another podcast on that later. So, hope you've enjoyed our chat.
I know I have.
As have I.
I mean, it's always a pleasure working with such great, great colleagues. Over and out.